You are looking at it from the absolute. You are looking from the absolute at the individual. That is not not fair. That's not wrong, but that's not fair.
But it does break the whole thing down.
It doesn't break. That doesn't break at all. That is, in other words, you are saying that it doesn't promote or it doesn't demote. It has nothing to do with it. By you are saying that when a wave arises, the lakeness of the lake has gone. And you are blaming, you are telling the lake that as long as when you produce a wave, you have ruined yourself. And the lake says no.
You're concealing your lakeness.
Yeah, and then the lake says no. I'm still here. Including this wave. Ha! Huh. And the lake turns around and says, I am the lake forever and ever, including this. So if you see it from that angle, it's delightful. Even the most intense, personal, limited love between husband and wife is also part of that cosmic love. It is because here there is this limitation, there is its opposite somewhere else. I love you, and in your company I am happy. In your company I experience the bliss of love. And when you are not there, I experience pain, I experience suffering, or I experience hate. When I look at somebody else, whom I don't like, I experience hate and all the rest of it. That does not, in the very least, touch the total thing called cosmic love. That is still there.
Besides that, the love between one and two seems, or the love between 10 people is just as limited.
Yes, exactly. But that, again, it is specially given to us in the Bhagavad Gita, where it is suggested that you may not immediately be able to break down all limitations totally and instantly. It may not be. If you are able to, that's wonderful, marvelous. But if you are unable to do that, let this love expand in concentric circles. You love yourself first, and you love, and when you love your husband or your children, it's very much like loving a cat. The cat is of no use to you, but it gives you the pleasure of stroking it, its fur. That's nothing more than that. And so, you're not stroking the cat because the cat, it's beneficial to the cat. It's for your own pleasure. So it's possible. Don't fight with me later. I'm only saying it is possible that your love of your husband or companion or your children or whatever it is, maybe because you derive some pleasure from that. It's again, you are loving yourself. It is narcissistic, but you realize that in order to gratify yourself, you may have to show a little bit of affection for this other fellow. Right? Even that is good. Because the totally limited selfish love has begun to expand just a little. And then it expands just a little more to include your family, your children, etc. Or your parents or something else. And then it expands a little more to embrace your community, the community in which you live, the yoga students, and so on. And then it expands a little more to include your religious community, or Catholic, or Protestant, or Hindu, or Muslim, so on. That is better than this, but even that is limited, of course.
Still, this one-two relationship seems to be all over, because you've been talking about lover and beloved, disciple.
It's always there. Yeah. It's always there. And as long as it is there, it may be better than something, nothing else. It may be better than nothing, but it is still there. As long as there is this limitation, it is fraught with its opposite.
Is it also that it's inherent that there's always two, since we have sort of first maybe later, but you try to find your inner self, your outer, your inner. The end is actually also only this one thing, finding your inner self, so getting the two together again.
Even if I repeat myself. When you find the inner self, you at that very moment you find that self is omnipresent.
Yeah.
When you find your inner self, at that very instant,
that's the end of the duality.
And therefore there is no duality at all, outside or inside. Even that inside-outside distinction has gone.
Mm-hmm. You said that that love is an anthropomorphic. You know the word I mean?
Anthropomorphic, yes.
How do you
and that love,
conceive
what did
of that love?
What did I say?
If that love isn't anthropomorphic, how do you conceive of it then? Because generally speaking, that's the symbol that you choose, like Krishna.
Yeah, we try to. Oh, he's not here that day, really. Mm-hmm. Possibly not. Huh? When it is done with an anthropomorphic structure, then this occurs. I suggested the other day that it is in the Veda, but in the Vedas, in the Bhagavatam, it's described very beautifully, and it is also in the Gheranda Samhita, which you read, right? The last section, the meditation section, you know, the loose leaf, where it is suggested as sthula dhyana, where you contemplate that anthropomorphic God as being cosmic, of cosmic dimensions, whose head is the heaven, whose torso is the space, and whose stomach or something is the earth, and whose feet are the earth, etc. Cosmic, enormous. In other words, you have a cosmic vision, which is still a vision, which is still an imagination. This is not the truth, may not be the truth, may be the truth. May not be the truth means, may be the truth. The description is given, and in that description, we visualize the earth as one small cell in that cosmic being. It is of no consequence at all. Just one little cell in this body of her brain alone has got 3 billion cells. And the rest of the body must have so many hundred billions of cells. Like that, I visualize the whole the Lord, Krishna, Buddha, whatever it is, and in that cosmic body of God, the earth is itself but a cell. Or if you like, if you don't want to belittle yourself so much, you think, I am also one small cell in that cosmic body of God. And that cell is what is called the soul. There are three words which are very similar. Cell, soul, self. Right? It is possible that it is that single cell, infinitesimal, single cell in the cosmic body of God that is called the soul, which represents me, the big shot. the I may be nothing more than just inframicroscopic cell in the cosmic body of God. That is one way of contemplating. Possibly this is true. We all do that. Possibly this is true. If you study, I love this as a pastime. If you study anatomy, and if you study what one cell is capable of doing, it's fantastic. What one little brain cell is capable of doing, what it is doing now, even you do not know. That I don't know if one day we must read that article here. You know what I mean? In Psychology Today, there is a lovely article about learning. It suggests how when an alarm rings, how do you wake up? We don't know anything. Even this is guesswork. How do these cells, one little cell in your brain, how does it perform its functions? What marvels are hidden in it? And supposing, that cell has some intelligence, yes? That little cell in your brain has got its own intelligence. Apparently its own intelligence. And for one moment, forget your identity as Nada Brahmananda. And you are that single little cell in the brain. What would be your vision of Nada Brahmananda? A colossal thing, by God. I'm stuck in one small part of this God's brain. There are millions, billions like me. It's a whole world within this world. And it is possible in the same manner for me to visualize for the present myself being a small cell in the cosmic body of that cosmic being. It's a lovely meditation. Puts us in our place. There is Terence may know. I saw a book 2 years ago, forgotten its name. It had 13 plus 13, 26 photographs, I think. One series expanding and the other contracting. The small and the big, or something like that. Some such title it had. The first series starts with a girl sitting outside there and some kind of knitting or sewing or something. Sewing or knitting. The picture is taken from 10 feet away. So you can see the girl fully with a little bit of the wall behind of the building. From there on, he goes back 10 times. 10 times the distance. So the next picture is taken from 100 feet away, right? So you can see the whole building plus a little bit of the background and so on. The next picture is taken from 10 times that distance. So you can see almost a whole panorama, and then the girl is nearly vanishing. 10 times the distance, even the building has vanished, is merged into the landscape. You see a whole landscape. And 10 times from there, the earth already becomes small. You're taking the picture from outer space. And then it goes back further and further back till you see the whole Milky Way. And in that, obviously, you cannot show where the earth is. It doesn't exist. The whole solar system probably exists as a dot. This is one series. The other series consists of, the first picture is on a finger, there is a sugar cube. Next to it, there is a mosquito sitting and stinging the finger. It's taken very close, from 10 inches. That picture is taken from 10 inches away. And then, you are going the reverse direction, into it. The next picture is dead on. Further on, there is no picture, it's all drawings. You cannot photograph dead on. And then you see the sugar cube like a mountain. Then the picture is taken inside the sugar cube. Representation of what is inside the sugar cube. Inside that, inside that, inside that. A world within a world within a world within a world within a world. Is that possible? And what is the relationship between the world within this sugar molecule and within the molecule, one single atom? What is the relationship of this to this? Which is the ultimate truth? Both, probably. It's possible, and it's a delightful form of meditation.
I think sometimes that it's necessary to balance love with light, with discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Where is that? Where is that nation? I've heard of all sorts of nations, Indian nations, American nations.
Discriminations?
Yeah, that's it. So, we discussed this yesterday. The division and devotion. Mm-hmm. And therefore, in bhakti, especially in bhakti yoga, not so much in others, especially in bhakti yoga, there is this caution all the time that, you know what she said? When the whole thing is limited to one man, one woman relationship, the whole thing is spoiled. So, I know of one young man who used to say, I'm practicing cosmic love. So don't do that. Which means that side by side with love there is this discrimination or wisdom. I prefer the word wisdom to discrimination, because discrimination also has got, you know, it's a loaded word. Discrimination means I am superior, you are inferior, that's all kinds of connotations are tagged on to it, unfortunately. So, wisdom. And I love the word wisdom, because if you are wise, it says you must be dumb. The wise man is dumb. So it says you must have wisdom side by side with love to ensure that you are not running into another, from jumping from one trap into another, from frying pan into fire. Imagine. So there is bhakti itself creates the division and then blends it, brings it up as devotion. First I love, and in that love I discover the element of cosmic love. I am interested in breaking the limitation, but not getting into another limitation. Not inviting another limitation.
And to get beyond the limitation, it's necessary to make division.
Yeah, that's it. Right. So that all the time as you go on, there is a division I love this and I don't love that. Naturally, it's still there. And as I go on, I tread softly, 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 to ensure that it's still, I'm proceeding closer to this cosmic love and not into another trap. That discrimination is necessary. Can we discuss this tomorrow? Yeah. So tomorrow or Monday. When you receive enlightenment, what is enlightenment? Hello. Let us receive enlightenment. See. Who asked the question? Who is this? Whose question is this?
Because she doesn't want to be known.
I know, but is she here?
Yes.
Yeah, and she'll be here on Monday?
Yes.
Good. Om Shanti.